Who's got it better than us?
Nobody! Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Let's get out of the zone phone. His visit every week is brought to you by our friends at Spherion Staffing. You have better things to do than scramble to find your next great hire. Let Spherion Staffing do it for you. Visit them online, spherion.com/Utah. That's spherion.com/Utah. Joining us now, my co-host for Jazz Pre, Half, and Post, the coach, Tim Lacombe. What's going on, coach?
Well, I haven't seen you for 7 hours.
I know. I miss you already.
We're down to four. Then there were four more games of the Jazz season. Totally crazy.
3-23 in their last 26 games. It's already tough. It's a little bit ironic that the Jazz worst run in team history was their very first 37 games of their existence. They went 3-34 and they're probably going to bookend their 50th season with another 3-25 or 3-27 stretch, I guess, if they lose out the rest of the way. What do you make of the last 30 games and what you've seen from the team, and is there anything to take from it?
Well, I think the minute the decision was made at the deadline, I think everybody, you know, that follows it knew what that meant. Considerable amount of depth, some veteran leadership that the Jazz leaned on was gone, and you know, it was kind of a course to play the younger players, and the old adage of, you know, you want to get old and stay old. Nothing against young players, but they have a lot to learn. I mean, and it's a process that doesn't happen overnight. I mean, we were watching Kuminga last night for Golden State, and it seems as though he was labeled a bust, and now he's really starting to come into his own. So everybody's on their own timeline. But I think that's what I make of it, is when that decision was made at the trade deadline, it opened up the door for a lot of reps and a lot of development for some of these guys that hadn't had a lot of that. And I think that's been a very good thing. You know, certainly hasn't yielded wins, but I think there's been little wins along the way.
You and I talked about it on the postgame show a little bit after the Clipper game on Friday, but now that we have maybe a little bit more long form to talk about it, give me your thoughts on Will Hardy going away from the rookies in the Clipper game and deciding to kind of send a message.
I loved it. You know, and I think that it's something that he's been great at this year. I think he understands the big picture, and, you know, you kind of have just a laissez-faire situation. And he said from the very beginning that these guys will earn their minutes and that nobody gets free ones. And, you know, where he was sitting in 6 minutes to be down to 26-7, it wasn't good enough, and he made, you know, a decision to have him watch for a bit. I thought they were markedly better last night from the outset. I think they were more tuned in. Some of the things that I've been hoping for, like, you know, Keontae to limit those turnovers, that was a better night for him last night. So, like I said, it's a long process, and just like parenting, you know, there's places along the way you got to put your foot down. And Will doesn't want to be a stick in the mud, and but at the same time, Will wants to lead this team to great things. And he's got a captive audience with young dudes right now that, you know, everybody hopes can make that impact. So this is a time to teach.
There's been a big kind of shift in narrative on Keontae George among Jazz fans that I've seen, where through really mid-March, which is not that long ago now, but it feels like a while, you know, he was the future face of the franchise, might be better than Lowry, Markkanen, et cetera, et cetera. And then these last, 13 games, 14 games since mid-March, he's really struggled to shoot the ball. Turnovers are through the roof. Like, A, what has been the difference? Like, what do you think happened? And B, where are you on Keontae George as a piece of the Jazz future?
Well, I think consistency has been a little bit of a thing all year in terms of shooting the basketball. But I think you could say some of that for other things, you know, running the floor back in transition, not making lazy passes, you know, being in the right spot. So like all young guys, he's had some of those bouts. And, you know, I would say consistency is the thing that I think he's really got to lock into. As far as his scoring and shooting, and particularly in this last stretch goes, so much can be made of the spacing. You know, it's different when Lowry's out on the floor because he's got everybody's attention. And really, if you look at the starting lineup with Colin and Keontae, you know, within the rookies, the other two rookies, and then, you know, it's been Yurtseven or Walker, so no Collins. Spacing's, you know, not true. And Keontae is getting a little bit more attention, perhaps. The other thing to take note of is his minutes are stretched. I think when he was at his best, he was somewhere around 20 to 25. And, you know, he's having to play 30-plus now. So I think all of those factors cause him to not shoot the ball as well. But I think the underlying factor, honestly, is consistency in everything that he does. And I think if he can make that a theme for the offseason, it would serve him well.
Coach, if we took the Celtics and the Nuggets off the table, and I think you and I both agree those are the heavy favorites in the East and West, if we took them off the table, who would you pick to go to the finals?
Wow. Okay, so I guess in the East I'll go with the Heat because, you know, this is their time of year and it's like Jason gets up from, you know, his last attempt to slash somebody and puts the mask on, heads out there again. So I'll say Miami in the East because I think that they just have that toughness. And then in the West, let's go ahead and say, man, Dallas. How about Dallas just for fun today? They're playing unbelievably good basketball. Last night they were down 22 to the Rockets and came back and won the game by 11 in overtime. I was a little bit skeptical, particularly early in the season, but when they made those trade deadline moves of P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford, I think that changed the course for them. They're nearly impossible to guard, and now they have a little bite on the defensive side, so I'll throw them out as a wild card if I can't pick those other two.
The East is shocking. The Boston Celtics, no surprise, are the best team in the East. Milwaukee is two. They're 15 games back of Boston for the number one seed.
And they're bad.
And they're bad. I mean, they've lost four in a row. They lost three straight games where they were double-digit favorites. It's never happened before. They lost to the Knicks last night. The Magic, somehow, after their hot start, still sit at number three in the Eastern Conference. Good for them. They're probably going to open at home against the Indiana Pacers, which is not a first-round series I expected to see. And then the Knicks in Cleveland, which is really the interesting one because obviously the ties between Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz and Donovan Mitchell and the Knicks. And right now, and we'll see how it finishes, the Knicks would have home court advantage. We are just hearing a ton of noise about Donovan Mitchell and an off-season trade and the Lakers wanting to pursue him and him maybe not picking up his player option, not for next season, but the season after that, which basically says, hey, Cleveland, you got to trade me or you're going to lose me for nothing. What do you think happens in Cleveland? What do you make of their season? What do you make of the Donovan Mitchell experiment with the Cavaliers?
Well, they, you know, I liked the fact that they went after him. And, you know, I from where I sat, I always felt like there was no way that he would re-sign there because I think he's got his sights set on big markets. And, you know, I think that the Lakers or Miami or the Knicks, you know, even the Nets, you know, to get them close to home, they come calling. And I think, you know, those big markets really, really stand out to Donovan. So I thought he had a, you know, the beginning of the year and the way they were playing early was great. But I think as this stuff has started to kind of seep in, they've certainly battled a ton of injury this year. But they look to me to be a team that is having no fun. And a lot of the looks on their faces remind me of the looks we saw here for a couple of years. I think it's impossible to be part of an organization and trying to win all the while having all this stuff burning in the background about, you know, how maybe some of the guys on the team that seem like they're part of the team aren't really part of the team. And I think that stuff wears on the team. I really do. And to me, it looks like that's where Cleveland is. I would pick New York to win that, you know. If they were to match up and play each other, New York would, I think they would eliminate them rather easily because I see New York as a team that's kind of going the other way. They got a lot of toughness and really kind of have a defined understanding of who they are. And I think that in Cleveland, it's almost like they're renting that right now. They're renting this mystique or this who they are, and really it's not who they are. You know, it's just a mask.
Coach, and you were all over this story yesterday. You were talking about this happening before it happened. But what do you make of John Calipari selling out to Big Chicken and taking the Arkansas job?
Well, what I would say is you can never have enough friends, and then I would preface that with friends with influence and money don't hurt either. You know, I think it's a good thing for everybody involved. The deal at Kentucky had run its course. I think. You know, Cal forever got known as that one and done guy who just brought in these, for lack of a better word, glamour models, you know, to come play for 8 months. And the number of guys that rolled through there and the names that rolled through there, completely staggering when you look at actually what was accomplished. And so I think that, like I say, I think Kentucky was probably like really grateful, and certainly Arkansas is excited. So it's one of those, another great story where a coach beats the posse, you know, with pitchforks and lanterns. He beats them to the punch and goes ahead and exits. But certainly a huge story. I saw little remnants of it on Twitter yesterday and in the morning, and I thought it was just something from April Fool's Day that had been residual. And as I started to dig into it and some of the people that were talking about it yesterday morning, I was like, whoa, this might have some people that I trust, you know, that I've watched. This might have some teeth. And so I got to the studio, told Jake, and sure enough, you know, before we got off the air, it happened.
It's a pretty fascinating change, and obviously we don't know where Kentucky's going to go from a coaching perspective. Here's the hard part. I don't think Coach Calipari is going to have the same success in Arkansas that Musselman had, which is already a downgrade. It's a worse job in Kentucky, and I expect whoever goes into Kentucky probably has more success on the floor, maybe even not recruiting, but on the floor than Coach Calipari had in Kentucky. How do you think this looks in 3 years?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I saw somewhere, you know, it said last night that the balance of power is changing in college basketball. And I'd say hold your horses on that. Certainly Cal's going to be able to create a stir and a ruckus. And I think, you know, get some momentum. He's always been able to recruit. That's never been an issue. But I watched them play 4 or 5 times this year. I watched them play Gonzaga. In Rupp. And I swear to you, Gonzaga ran the same play 14 times in a row and scored on it. And when I'm saying 14 times in a row, like 14 times in a row with very little to no adjustment. Offensively, you know, I thought Kentucky was so purposeless this year, just kind of a take 'em situation. So I would say that, you know, I would say Cal needs to kind of reinvent his staff and maybe get a couple of guys who are a little more current in the game. I look at his bench right now and it's kind of just a, you know, it's the 4 or 5 henchmen that went out and recruited back when giving money to players was illegal. Now it's legal. Everybody can do that now. So those 4 guys are really kind of useless. I would go get 4 guys that can really coach. And then in terms of the way this looks, I'm with you. I mean, right now they're talking about some names, you know, but the names they're talking about, like Scott Drew, can really coach. You know, I know Danny Hurley's kind of a pipe dream. I know that, that Nate Oates would be somebody that would be thrown out there. He just kind of looks the part and is an awesome guy. The coaching would be phenomenal. But, yeah, I think what you said, I think Arkansas may get a little bump for a minute. But I do believe things may look up for Kentucky, depending on, you know, who they hire, because I think everybody can get behind it now. I think that fan base had, you know, I think it was probably half and half or less than half and half people that really thought and supported, hey, this can happen, we can do good things, or, you know, this has run its course. So at least they can all get behind somebody now, too.
Who do you think wins tonight?
Connecticut.
What are you watching for?
I think it's going to be a great game. I'm excited to watch those two guys, two big guys. They're so different. You know, they're big dudes, but they're so vastly different. So I think that will be interesting. But I just think I watched Purdue really struggle, you know, with turnovers. And I don't know that they're their guards, particularly Smith. Smith looked shaky to me the other night. And this Connecticut team, from the time they take the court, they're going to be in your business. So I would expect this to be not a rout, but a double-digit victory for Connecticut.
Yeah, I think UConn's really athletic. And that's not what Purdue has done. You know, Purdue is actually not huge in the backcourt and very big in the frontcourt. And Zach Edey's going to get his. I don't think Klingon's going to be able to shut him down. But ultimately, I think a guy like Stephon Castle, is going to be a name Jazz fans should watch tonight. Have you seen him? And what do you think about him as a potential draft pick?
Yeah, I love him. You can tell he's a guy who really, and this is a term I use, I always used to use when I recruited, but really knows the score, plays to the score. There's so many guys out there that are, you know, trying to get points when the game's out of reach. You know, guys are getting free looks and padding their stats. This guy, everything he does is in the guts of the game. He's tough. Obviously, they say his jumper's shaky, but we've heard that about guys, and they've come and really worked on it. It doesn't look totally broken to me, his shot. I really like the kid. I've been intrigued by him. I think he's been, you know, if not the most valuable all-around player, he's certainly been one of them this year at Connecticut. So I really like him. I think he may go higher than where the Jazz are unless, you know, we get fortunate and bump up a little bit. But I think he's moving up in the draft from everything I hear.
Where are you on Klingon as a draft prospect?
He's unique. He's interesting. I heard somebody the other day, I can't remember who, but to me, one thing I look about for the NBA are two things for big guys. Can they run the floor? He's certainly like a gazelle out in transition, runs the floor great. He's a rim runner extraordinaire. And then the second thing I think he does really well is, you know, side to side, guarding ball screen, proficient in drop coverage. He's a great on-ball and weak side defender. He's definitely going to be an intriguing look for teams because I think his best basketball is still ahead of him.
Circling back to this a little bit, we should have asked, do you think Pope, what percentage chance do you think he has of leaving BYU for Kentucky?
Well, this is what I do know. Mark he's done a heck of a job at BYU. I think he's one of those guys that, you know, he wants to win big. I think knowing him, national championship, you know, that's something every coach really dreams of, but like it's one of the things he's put on paper, you know, in bold ink that he really wants to do that as a coach. So I think it come down to, you know, if he could get it, I think it would be a no-brainer that he would go. I think it's one of maybe only a handful of jobs that he would, because I think he's got an awesome situation at BYU now with being a power broker, you know, having some NIL money to throw around, and then coming off the heels of an awesome year. You know, he's got some things to build on. But the way I look at Kentucky, they're going to swing for the fences. You know, you try to get Scott Drew, the Nate Oates, the Danny Hurley. They're going to try to go, you know, and pull Jay Wright off of the set. You know, those calls will all be made. But I think when it settles, you know, and then maybe they find out that a couple guys are going to stand pat, one thing that would rally this fan base above all else is to bring home, you know, one of their own. And the one thing I do know is he's beloved there. They love him there. He went back while we were coaching together for a celebration and brought the house down, you know, pulled off his suit and was in a Kentucky uniform. So, I mean, I think he would definitely be somebody. But, I just think the nature of this is very high profile. And so I think they're going to try to, you know, hire all the big names first. But I think they'll settle in on a working group. And I think Mark will be a part of that working group for sure.
Coach, you are the best. I will see you tomorrow night. We got a home game against the Nuggets.
Oh, we do? Okay.
I believe so.
We do. We're Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, man, and we're out.
Crazy. So, it's wild.
Yeah. Oh, you're not working?
Have an awesome day.
You're not working Friday?
You too, buddy.
Oh. You skipping the Friday game?
What's that?
You skipping the Friday game?
No, I said Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday.
Oh, I thought you said Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Check the tape.
Oh, maybe I didn't.
You're already...
Yeah, maybe I'll have you fill in for me. I'll call you.
You're already tanking.
Thanks, Tim.
See you guys.
See you, buddy. There is our friend Tim Lacombe. His appearance brought to you by Spherion Staffing, Spherion, Spherion.com/Utah.
It's kind of amazing Mark Pope made the NBA.
How long did he play?
153 games. Played 97, 98, 98, 99. Played in the CBA in 2000. 2 more years with Milwaukee in 2000, 2000 through 2002. Back to the CBA and then played 03, 04 and 04, 05.
So he got a pension?
I suspect so, as long as he wasn't just doing the two smaller contracts to qualify. And I actually don't even know all that how all that works. But like his college stats are not – and I'm look, he made the NBA. Like, he made it. I'm not trying to say he wasn't worthy of it at all. It's just kind of crazy.
Kind of sounds like
That's exactly what it sounds like. 2 years at Washington, 10 points, 8 rebounds a year basically. Transferred to Kentucky, 8.6 rebounds his first year, 7.5 rebounds his second year. Just kind of interesting. Kind of interesting to see those types of guys. Now, again, kind of unique because at his size, he started shooting the three, even at Kentucky in that early age. And, you know, that always provides intrigue. Didn't take a lot of threes in the NBA, though. It's just not the type of guy that would make the NBA today. It's a different era. He'd be the first to tell you that.
Keep digging, buddy.
No, it's funny that he is that. It's also funny that he's that beloved at Kentucky. Oh, fine, I'll say it. Mark Pope wouldn't make the NBA today. I'm not feel bad about that. He doesn't owe it to me. He did make the NBA.
Just said you're surprised Kentucky fans even cheer for him. He was so bad.
I said I'm surprised he's that beloved.
Because a player that terrible should never be beloved.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's exactly what you said.
No. Like when you consider the rich history of college basketball at Kentucky and the names that are in that group.
How would a crappy player like him even be notable?
Sure. That's what you want to pretend
I'm
saying?
That's exactly what you're saying.
What
I didn't say it, Coach Pope. That's Ben Anderson.
I said it's amazing he made the NBA. That's a success story. That's a guy who didn't have a standout NBA or college career, especially when big guys were big guys, and they had these college players that would play 4 years, and by the time they were leaving college, they were averaging 20 and 10. Those guys made the NBA back then. It's not what makes the NBA today, but guys like Mark Pope got into a training camp, obviously, and wowed everybody. It's awesome. It's a crazy story. It's not something you see very often.
He must have bribed his way onto the team or
Royce
something.
Royce O'Neal, that his era.
Not good.
A Royce O'Neal.
In the
out
NBA.
Of nowhere, didn't get drafted. Good four-year player, had to spend some time overseas, but ultimately it worked out.
How would you feel if your high school English teacher found out what you were doing for a living? She's like, wow, it's amazing. Ben
they
is
all
a writer.
Would say that. They would all say that. Are you kidding
me? It's incredible.
Me?
That guy couldn't
Dr.
put three
Jameson,
words together.
My English professor in college, she would be like, him? He made it?
A guy with that little skill is writing for a living?
So our first day of class... we were learning about, this was a class called Enlightenment to Romanticism. And it was the two eras of kind of this philosophy where Enlightenment was all about this idea that like we need to record all of the knowledge that we have on the planet. It's where thesauruses came from, dictionaries. Like this group of thinkers started saying like, hey, let's document everything. And then the Romantics were like, they switched. They're like, we're too academic. We need to get back to just like enjoying life. That's where a lot of the great poetry came from. So anyways, our first day in class, it's this big auditorium, and she says, I am what I am. Who said that originally? And it was, you know, one of these writers from the Enlightenment era. And more educated people know that essentially my understanding is Jesus said something of that ilk. I am what I am. And I raised my hand, and I had said, Popeye said that. she wasn't looking for Popeye. She was looking for Jesus. And I went with the cartoon sailor.
Now that guy is writing for a living. It's amazing.
Now he's the writer from the class.
Adult like that actually is writing for a living. Kyle's surprised he gets his shoes on his right feet. On the right. Mark Pope.
Sorry, Dr.
Kyle, I can't believe somebody like that would get into the NBA. Somebody with that little skill, little going for him. Kyle, what happened?
Call the show, Mark, if you want to talk.
Stay tuned. More next. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Bin, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday. Don't miss your chance to win big every week on the KSL Sports Zone. This week on Win Ticket Wednesday, you can win a pair of tickets to go see Sam Hunt at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater August 3rd. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. Speaking of chances to win, the Masters is this week. That means the Uinta Major Golf giveaway is back. Caller 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. We're going to assign you a golfer competing in the Masters this week. If your player wins, you win that player's brand of driver, courtesy of our friends at Uinta Golf. So be caller 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. You going to be dialed into the Masters this weekend, Ben?
Sure. Who's playing?
Fuzzy Zeller.
Okay. How's Davis Love
that
doing?
That was a rant. I was just trying to think of an old golfer. How did that come to mind?
How's Davis Love been?
I don't think he plays.
How did he play last year?
I don't think he played well. Gary Player, I think, is the favorite.
Okay. In on it?
Bobby Jones.
Whoa.
Way back.
Still using the old clubs?
Going to the way back. It's kind of wild. Golf season is here.
Yeah,
you know what?
We're fully here.
This 2024 so far has just flown by.
Christmas summer.
With a little...
You do it about 85 times, that's what we get.
With a little spring snow mixed in.
Once in a while you get three or four springs.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, March Madness ends tonight. NBA basketball playoffs are basically here.
Yeah. No, I mean, the season's over.
Yep.
I feel bad, even though it's not my responsibility at all, though I cover the team, and I hope people enjoy the coverage. But sometimes you are, victim to the team that you cover. And I'm not pretending I'm a victim, you know.
Yeah, what are you
Very
talking
good
about?
Good job. I wish the season was more enjoyable for Jazz fans. Like, all I see on Twitter is how miserable this is. I wrote about a bunch last night, the worst stretch for the Jazz in basically 50 years. This 3-23 stretch. It's as bad a basketball as I've ever seen in my life watching the Jazz. You know, it's a low. And again, it's with a purpose. They believe that this is positioning themselves to strike when the Milwaukee Bucks fall apart and Giannis Antetokounmpo asks for a trade. You know, that type of situation. It's what they are positioning themselves to do. But, man, this has not been a fun season. Like, last year the Jazz didn't win a lot of games. I thought last year was a far more enjoyable season to watch than this year has been. This has been one of maybe going back to the Carlos Boozer first year with AK's injury and Boozer's hamstring and all those issues, Memo not living up to expectations his first year, as unenjoyable of a basketball season as there's been in Utah, maybe ever.
When fans say that, I'm not saying you do, but when fans say that, it sounds like they're blaming the team.
Okay.
Are you?
The team meaning the players?
No, the team meaning the Jazz, the organization.
Yeah.
They didn't create the system. It doesn't behoove them to win basketball games. That's not the Jazz didn't create the NBA system where it's actually an advantage to lose. Why? Like, what's the criticism? Because the criticism at halfway point is, you know, it's in your best interest to suck, right? What are you doing? And then they suck. And now people are going like, well, how dare you suck this bad? What are you talking about? Is it in their best interest to suck or not?
It is.
And that's not their fault.
Right.
That's the NBA's
fault. That is the NBA's fault.
If you don't like it, then stop watching the NBA. Then it just makes me laugh that the very same people are like, man, this clinic is too good, man. He's winning too many ball games. What are the Jazz doing? Are you kidding? And then they suck, and everybody's like, oh, you suck too much? Or you should have sucked less over a longer period
or
of time?
More.
Or what if?
Yeah.
It's just so stupid.
Yeah.
And it's not the organization's fault.
Okay, I'm with you on that. I think you're making a good point. But I still wish this was a more enjoyable season. Like, I think there are actually ways to tank and be more enjoyable than this Jazz team has been.
I don't know about that. And you know what? The fans that go to the games, even though they lose, seem to be enjoying themselves. They're packing the stadium still.
The arena sells out.
I was here during the last rebuild, and they didn't sell this many tickets to the last rebuild. And I don't feel bad for the young kid that went and had a great time at the basketball game.
Yeah.
You can, so I don't know. I don't buy into that. I feel bad for Jazz fans. I don't, this is the sport. This is what comes along with it.
I think it can be both. I think you can hold both. And I think that's what Jazz fans are
doing. That's what Kevin O'Connor tried to do, and he couldn't get over the hill, over the hump.
No,
and everybody held it against him.
What I'm saying is you can hold both emotions. You can be mad that the team is this unenjoyable to watch at the moment, and also...
But be mad at who? That's my point.
Sure, okay. If you want to say that the anger at Danny Ainge and Ryan Smith and Justin Zanuck is misdirected, I think that's probably
should
fair.
Should be mad at Adam Silver.
I think that's fair.
You should be mad at the league. These rules are stupid.
Yeah.
It is stupid to reward losing. It is dumb.
Yeah.
Now, if the league didn't reward losing and the team really sucked, well, I'll jump all right on board. And that's the team's fault. But in this, how do you build a championship? That's what everybody asked of Ryan Smith. The first question at his press conference after he bought the team, after all the formalities, was, are you in it? Are you in it to win a championship? Well, this is how you have to do it. This is a strategy. And it's, by the way, it's a strategy that people understand. So who are you mad at?
And I think there is a chance. I'm not going to say it's, I don't know. Well, there's a chance this is the most productive Jazz season in a very long time. Because they did a lot of the unfun work. You lose games, you get a high draft pick. You invest a lot in these three young players, Keontae George, Taylor Hendricks, Bryce Sensabaugh, and you hope that this investment that you've given them over the last 30 games really turns into something that you reap the reward of down the road when you're expecting to be good again. That is what you're hoping. You traded away two good players in Simone Fontecchio and Kelly Olynyk and throw Ochai Agbaji in that group to get two more draft picks. Like, it has a chance to have a lot of payoff. But the payoff is not immediate at all. It's ways down the road that you're going to see any of this. And then you have to hope that those things actually do come true, come to fruition. But it has not been fun to experience for Jazz fans.
Now, to your point about last year being more enjoyable than this year, or about even to the people that say, oh, you didn't suck right away, or you haven't sucked long enough, or all that. Answer me this. If people are looking at the Oklahoma City rebuild as some sort of blueprint, how did the season go with Oklahoma City the year after they traded Paul George and Rusty Westbrook?
They almost make the playoffs?
They made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs with Chris Paul.
They
right?
did. And they were this big story on how, oh, they chased all their players away, but they still made the playoffs. Probably not in the best interest of the franchise, but it's hard to blow apart an entire team and suck overnight.
Yeah. Even then. Right.
Even then. So people are like, well, the Jazz didn't suck enough last year. Well, you know what? It's really hard to chase everybody away and be bad enough to be the bottom of the league overnight. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because you brought back players. You brought back Lauri Markkanen and Colin Sexton. The Thunder brought back Chris Paul because it's the only contract that you could have traded Rusty for.
The Jazz are demoing a house, and they wanted to make sure that they held onto the copper wire and whatever vintage furniture instead of just bulldozing it to the ground and saying, we're throwing everything out.
I don't even know if it's possible to bulldoze it to the ground, honestly.
Oh, and overnight?
And I don't think it is.
Don't think the Jazz feel, honestly, that they can get to the bottom of the standings, period. Like, the Jazz don't believe they could get to 15 wins unless they just give up on Lauri Markkanen, and I don't think that's the plan.
I don't think fans want that either.
No, fans
so
don't want that either.
It's like, who are you mad at, you know? Like, I guess I feel bad that you're mad, but who are you mad at? And what do you want? It's so funny. People complain about Larry Miller for years. Oh, you do just enough to make the playoffs. And then now the ownership is going the entire opposite approach where it's like, okay, we're going to bottom out and we're going to do this way. And fans are still like, well, I didn't know it was going to get this bad. You didn't?
Yeah. It is a catch-22. It is a catch-22.
You can't win.
Yeah. And the ultimate issue is it's like, also, the Spurs, who tanked at the exact right time, and we'll say this time, I mean, obviously you can go back to Tim Duncan and see how well that worked out. The Spurs are not guaranteed a title with Victor Wembanyama, and the Boston Celtics are not guaranteed a title for winning 68 games this year.
And the Spurs didn't just lose one year and got Tim Duncan. They've missed the playoffs five consecutive years.
Right. And have
have no hope of climbing out anytime soon.
And have thought they've had guys that, you know, turn into Josh Primo. You know, like they've had guys that they thought, okay, we got our difference maker. This is the person we're going to build around. And they don't, those players never panned out.
So people's expectations are funny to me. But the same people complaining about them not sucking enough are now the same people complaining about them sucking too much. And it's like, one, that's ridiculous. Two, who are you criticizing?
Well, I think the word you use there that's most important when it comes to fun is expectation. And we've talked about this a lot. There were zero expectations going into last season They exceeded those expectations, and everyone enjoyed the year, even if you want to criticize them for not tanking enough. But when the Jazz were 12-3, there weren't a lot of fans saying, "Look, I'm not buying tickets to this team until they start tanking, because this is the wrong plan." Because you were having fun, and it was fun to watch Lauri Markkanen be the face of an all-star team locally, and Jordan Clarkson be the, you know, be at All-Star Weekend and compete in the Skills Challenge with Colin Sexton. Everyone was happy to see Walker Kessler going out there and surprisingly winning games for the Jazz, because your expectations said that was not going to happen, and they exceeded your expectations. And then we set high expectations for this team this year because of what they did last season, and they were worse, and you don't meet or exceed those expectations, and all of a sudden it feels like a failure. But I do still have sympathy that it wasn't fun. This is an entertainment business, and the entertainment was lacking.
I don't know, Ben. I've had to sit through them all. I've been entertained plenty.
It's because you hang out with Tim Lacombe.
Oh, I know.
You've been entertained by Tim Lacombe.
Last night, Klay Thompson was entertaining. I mean, he was taking apart the Jazz, but he was entertaining.
That is a luxury that you and I have, because we don't root for the teams, and we honestly don't care, with all due respect, if the Jazz win or lose, that we can enjoy what else is going on the floor.
Didn't the Jazz surrender 18 dunks the other night to, who was that, Dallas?
Dallas.
Enjoyed all 18.
Yeah, I like Daniel Gafford.
Entertaining.
I like watching him play.
No, my point is the NBA is entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're bummed when your team doesn't win, but you can have a great time going to the Jazz game still. I get grumpiness kind of, but I don't think that you're correct in being grumpy, let alone correcting being grumpy with the Jazz front office. Hey, I'm grumpy with the whole thing with the NBA, and I'm frustrated that it will never change. But it is stupid. Why would you ever reward losing? Why would you ever try to lose?
They will keep putting cats in this wall. They will keep trying to change
always,
the lottery.
And it won't fix it.
I'll be curious if they ever find a way to do it. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, get rid of it. Get rid of the draft. Or I still love the flat odds for everybody.
Yeah, I think flat odds for everybody. Though I would do lottery. You want to do all 30 teams.
All 30 teams.
Celtics get the number one pick. We're adding Wemby. Okay.
Awesome. And you know what? In Detroit, added Darko Milicic. How did that go?
Yeah.
I mean, it's no guarantee. Just like it's no guarantee for the crappy teams that they're going to land a superstar.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, there's not.
It's no guarantee.
So you might as well try and be okay.
Why not?
Yeah.
Wrapping up the show next. Stay tuned. Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows. Peach is Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology in doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Ben, I feel bad for people that are going to be on the road with me on the way home today.
You're going to have three pairs of sunglasses on?
I'm going to stare right at the sun. As soon as I get outside, I'm looking right at it.
I'm running over to Jazz practice after the show, and I'm curious if we can get a timeout at 12:32 to watch the eclipse. I'm going to ask.
It started already around here, right? It started at like 11:20-something.
Oh, did it?
And it ends at like 1-something.
Yeah, but it comes to its fullest, I think, around what Jake
12:30.
Said.
12:30.
Or Ben
said. Oh, go outside right now.
Stare right at it.
Yeah.
I don't see it!
I don't see it. I don't see anything.
It's got this big black spot. All over my vision.
Where are you on eclipse? Give me your take on eclipse.
I don't care.
I will look at it today. We get told this is once in 400 years that this happens, and I remember the picture of President Trump staring at the eclipse, and I have a picture of my son when he's 12, when he was 4 years old, staring at an eclipse. Like, these once-in-a-lifetime eclipses seem to happen every 3 or 4 years. It's crazy.
Yeah, whatever. Call me when Halley's Comet is back.
Yeah, that's the big deal. That's the real one. But yeah, these events that you'll never see again, I've seen so many in my lifetime. It's kind of enjoyable.
Do you think the world's ending?
No. Huh? Didn't we have one like
the
10...
world going to end? Is that what you said?
Yeah, well, everyone, there was like a bunch of notices that were released about
Rapture.
Stocking up on food and water and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's just the preppers trying to sell goods.
Did you buy any?
That's the you know what? That's the good folks who make ammunition and we're trying to have a big payday.
Go the opposite direction. Get rid of everything. Right? Just sell off everything. It's the end.
Well, what do you need that money for?
You can go on a quick vacation. What do you need water for?
Do you think the world's ending? Is this our last show, Sarah?
No, I don't think so. I was just curious.
I hope this isn't our last show, regardless of whether the world's ending. Jeez.
No, wasn't there an eclipse like 10 minutes ago? My neighbors went to...
like 2017 or something?
No, like this year. They went to... Or maybe it was last year. I don't know. They went to Bryce Canyon to see one. Yeah.
Yeah, you and I were doing a show, and the guy was talking about how he was going to travel, the guy that we were talking to.
To see the eclipse, yeah.
Yeah, he had sleeping bags.
It seems like there's one of these things every 10 minutes. No, I don't care.
I'm totally with you. So I will look at it, but I'm with you. This idea that, like, this economic boon, it's like, what do you mean? Just watch the national championship game tonight. Have fun. That's once a year.
Gave Lloyd an excuse to buy 12 new guns.
He's going to shoot at the moon.
Stay tuned. Hanson Scotty coming up next.
Thanks, Sarah.
97.5 DKSL Sports Zone.